TheWeb.com podcast, and I'm your host, Trillian. Well, we are back. The Narnia Web Council is here again with just Jim Fan today, but we're going to go ahead and discuss Prince Caspian again and start moving on. Jim Fan, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Terrific. Well, I am very sorry that no one else could make it here today, especially since we're discussing Reepy Cheep, and I know Glum Puddle would have loved to discuss this scene with us, but hopefully, I got an email from Jintz, and we're hopefully going to have her on within the next few days, and we're going to talk to her, and she can maybe even give us a rundown of the premiere in the UK, which is doing pretty well. It completely sold out, I heard.
Yeah, that was a big arena, too.
Yeah, how many people
I would have loved to be there. I'd have no idea how many people were there.
Several thousand, I think. But all right, well, basically, this scene, it basically starts off with Caspian and Nicabrick. Caspian, Nicabrick, and Truffle Hunter just going through the woods. And, of course, Caspian's talking about the Minotaurs and asking if they're real. And they're warning him that, well, you know, the Minotaurs might, you know, the Centaurs might side with you, but the Minotaurs, they're pretty bad tempered. And then, of course, we have the whole Reepy Cheep scene coming up, but in this moment. But first off, let's just look at the dialogue. I guess you have the transcript with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What do you think of this before we actually get to the chase bit? You know, what did you think? I remember someone, I think on the forums, pointed out they thought it was kind of you know, it was again just kind of a little. They're just wondering, what do the Telmarines believe? And it seemed to me, I thought, at least with Caspian, it was pretty close to the book. Because in the book, it's obvious that Caspian's not really sure if they're still around. But
they're not consistent. That's the thing. And I was just watching it the other day. It seems like Telmarines are not consistent in what they believe, almost. You know, what they know, what they think might be real, and what they never even imagined could be real. And Caspian that's just the feeling I got.
Yeah, I agree it was a little inconsistent with the rest of the Telmarines, but I thought at least with Caspian, it was pretty close to the book, at least with Caspian.
Yeah.
Because Caspian believed that they once there, but, you know, he asks Dr. Cornelius, he says, well, are they still there? And Dr. Cornelius says, well, I don't know. Sometimes I think there can't be. So for Caspian, like we talked about, well, extinct. Did they think they were extinct? Did they think they were a myth? For Caspian, at least in the book, it was really a question of whether or not they were extinct, because he really did believe they were real. It's just whether or not they were still in Narnia anymore.
Point. Right.
But I thought it was. I guess the dialogue served its purpose. It did kind of distinguish between, you know, how, of course, it gets into the Minotaurs, which is was pretty controversial. I remember, and Glumfiddle still doesn't like them in there, but I don't really have a problem with it.
I got used to it. Yeah.
To me, the Minotaurs are analogous to the Black Dwarves or the Wolves. I mean,
in my
opinion,
that makes sense.
They weren't quite like
it. Didn't have to be there, but, you know, since they went through all the trouble of making them, you know, why not?
Yeah, Andrew Henderson comes up to Howard. Like, all right, Florida. Howard, you can have your Minotaurs in the film.
Yes. And I just know how sad they're going to be for the next one. Oh, we can't put these people in. We can't put these people in because they would never be on a ship.
Well, there's no creatures in except for Reaper.
Well, they're going to put a few. They can put, like, I can understand they put, like, a fawn or something. But
well,
no sense.
That's a whole other discussion.
But, yeah, we'll get to that later.
Yeah. Although, a side note, I'm trying to think. I guess we'll discuss the casting for Eustace later, because that is a big piece of news that it was just announced.
Yes, it is.
And most people seem fairly positive, although I know of one Narnia Webber who I shall not name right now, who is, thinks that they're out, the filmmakers are out of their minds for casting him.
I don't understand that at all. I'm completely happy. That's spot on casting. I mean, you know, when Ben Barnes was cast, it was like, whoa, what was that? You know, that, we're not expecting that at all. But, you know, when they cast this kid, whose name I am forgetting at the moment.
Let me go check.
Will Poultry or something. I don't think I said that right.
Let's get it right for him. He deserves it. Will Poulter. Not Poultry.
Yeah, but that often caused me a lot of trouble.
But, yeah, now I'm going to have to go see Son of Rambo.
Yeah, I saw the trailer. So that looked kind of, it looked funny. I don't know if I'm going to see it, but.
Well, I'll have to now. Yeah, moving back to.
present time.
You know, one thing that, of course, we got into, of course, we have Reepy Cheep's entrance here and the soldiers. One thing I do want to point out that I really did like is that, you know, Andrew Adamson, of course, likes to flesh out the characters. And in the case of Knickerbreck, I felt like they made him a little more interesting in this one, where he was still the villain. But I remember reading the book and where Prince Caspian says, oh, I'm sorry for Knickerbreck, even though he hated me. He, you know, if we'd won quickly, he might have, you know, become a good dwarf. And I remember reading that and I'm thinking, no, Caspian, sorry, you're just a bad judge of character. He was
you're
bad.
You're delusional.
You're just naive and overly optimistic. But here, you know, the fact that Knickerbreck started running back to save Truffle Hunter, I thought, oh, okay, you know, yeah, that, you know, that kind of shows, makes him a more interesting character where he's not completely the bad guy.
Yeah, I hadn't been expecting that kind of character development in him at all. You know, I thought he would just be, you know, just there because he has to be there. But, you know, sort of like Truffle Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they really worked him into the story, and I was really surprised, and I really like it. He was a good character to have.
Yeah.
He turned out really well.
Did you notice when Reepy Cheep is, of course, cutting down the soldiers, and I don't know where he's stabbing them, because they're just like, one little stab in the foot and they're instantly dead. You know? But did you notice the little mouse sounds? Did you notice the mouse sounds that you had at one? They had at one point. You had the little squeaky, the squeaking sound.
Not really.
If you watch
the
it again,
it's
the scene where the camera's running through the bushes and it looks up and you hear that kind of the squeaking mouse sound.
But there's a lot else going on, so it's kind of hard to hear.
Yeah, but if you listen, it's there. And I just thought, I just love that they still keep the animals, you know?
Yeah.
And some people didn't like that Reepy Cheep walked on all fours at some points, but I thought, you know, if...
It works. He's a mouse, you know?
I think there's time, yeah, certainly. I think there's time to do that. If it's faster, he'll certainly... And if he's climbing on things, sure, he'll go on all fours. I mean, I never did like the illustrations where Aslan's walking on his hind legs. I just never...
Oh, no.
I never got that.
No. I never... There's only, like, one, isn't there?
I think there's only one. It's him and Peter, I think.
No, I thought it was him and the White Witch.
Oh, that's right. Him and the White Witch. And he has his
hands...
Yeah,
that always looked
paws.
Off on me. And then I realized why. Because he's walking on his hind legs.
Yeah, but...
This makes sense.
You know, I have to say, I really... love Reepy Cheep's dialogue. I thought,
yes.
This is the part where he says, no thanks. He goes, pick it up. He's just sort of, come on, be a man. what are you afraid of?
Look, and I love how Caspian is absolutely terrified, almost.
Well, I'd say startled, for sure.
Startled, but he's almost... kind of scared of him because he's seen what he's done to these other soldiers. And he doesn't know that much about him, so yeah, he'd be kind of fearing for his life just a little bit.
Yeah, I just like the part where, of course, he's trying. I almost got the idea he was trying to flatter Reepy Cheep at one point where he says, "Which is why I will live longer if I choose not to cross blades with you, noble mouse." I said I wouldn't fight you. I didn't say I'd let you live.
Well, of course, I love the part afterwards where the chief's like, I hope you have a, let's see. He says, hope you have a good reason for this untimely
Oh,
interruption.
yes.
And he's like, he doesn't. Go
He
ahead.
doesn't. Go ahead. Well, you know, there's one thing they kind of, that they use this scene again to reinforce, which we, they kind of, they really do it in three or four scenes. Well, actually, more like five, I suppose, because the idea that with the Narnians, even on the Narnian side, there's an idea of myth returning to real life. Or you could even, you know, again, get into the controversy of the extinct becoming unextinct. But the myth returning, because you have, of course, the beginning where Trumpkin sees the horn, okay? And you can tell whatever he's thinking, he recognizes the horn. And then, of course, you have Trumpkin seeing Peter's sword. You have Truffle Hunter telling Caspian when he's holding the horn, he says, don't you realize what this is? And you have, again, Truffle Hunter just has to say, Rippy Chief, he's the one who blew the horn. And Rippy Chief, what?
Yeah, and everyone knows. I hadn't thought that they would, it would be like that. I thought, you know, it would warrant a bit more explaining, but I guess it would make sense, you know, that they would have studied up and recognized these things.
Yeah, well, I thought it was just interesting to see how just Reepy Cheap
and like
the
how Cornelius almost recognized Susan's arrow.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of felt like he was recognizing it, which I thought, how could he recognize
Miraz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, it was when he brought Cornelius in and Cornelius saw the arrow and he's like,
oh, yeah, that did strike me as a bit odd, because...
well, I guess if he's that well-versed in...
Yeah, I suppose, but it's not like...
Kingdom team, but still.
To me, it almost seemed like he was saying, it's a red-fletched arrow. You Telmarines are so evil, everything's black and gray. You would never use something colorful. Of course not.
It could have been anyone's.
Yeah, some little kid. There's a red-fletched arrow. Red-fletched arrows are banned in Telmar and Narnia. I'm sorry. There is no joy or happiness here.
Even their clothes are all dark and depressing.
Yes. And, well, we'll get into that later. But, I'm just thinking of the gloominess of the Telmarines. And the one thing, I remember one of my friends didn't like the end... You know, the ending, how he didn't really understand. You know, wouldn't some people be confused why everyone's cheering that the Narnians have won and everything? Not so much, except that it doesn't really make much sense at all if on why all the Telmarines are cheering for Miraz if he's this horrible, evil tyrant. Remember,
right.
The scene where he's crowned. But
I mean, it could have been, like, forced cheering, like, come out and make a good show or...
Yeah, like the Mask of Zorro. I know you've all been paid. but that's a later scene, anyway.
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
So next, Lost in the Black Woods.
Dear little friend.
Although I've seen both times I saw the movie, I thought I can barely hear them say DLF. I want it to be loud and clear. DLF. I don't know how many people caught it, but
people who hadn't read the books, yeah.
Yeah, A Dear Little Friend did come out clear, though. I mean, oh, that's not at all patronizing, is it? But,
Doesn't they use it more than once?
I'm not sure.
I'm not for sure that they used it at least once later on, but maybe they didn't.
Well, I'll just do a search through the document there to see if they do.
Hang on.
Is there twice?
No, it isn't.
Yeah, just once. Like Trumpkin's name. What were your thoughts on this scene? Just when they're basically up to the point where Peter gives his retort to Trumpkin.
He's kind of on an ego trip.
Yeah. I thought really almost more than any other...
Like, why are you so... That's such a rotten attitude. You don't have to, you know.
I really did think up till that was almost more than any other scene, even almost more than the Caspian Peter word fight, I guess we'll call it, because they draw swords, but they don't really go at it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, they do go at it, but only with a mistaken identity. But here, I thought really almost more than any other scene, this is the one where I thought if someone's going to decide that Peter's a jerk, then this is going to be the scene that decides that.
Yeah, because he's being rude and nasty almost to Trumpkin for no good reason. I mean, he hasn't been there in quite a long time. Trumpkin has, and he's, you know, much older. You think maybe he could offer some good advice, but no, he's got a, I know everything, you're wrong, you're mistaken.
Although I will say it does do a good job of setting up, of course, the next shot where we have Susan and Peter, and Susan, oh, hundreds of years, water rosier, so, oh, shut up. I know in my theater both times that was just a huge laugh right there.
Yeah. And he's like, well, I wasn't wrong.
Well, I wish they
just had the right way.
Well, I wish they still, you know, just before that, say, instead of Peter, you know, saying that explains that, you know, I'm saying, just saying, he said, trust me, Trumpkin, the land doesn't change, you know, and then the next shot, I mean, because that was the point in the book, was that, oh, Aladdin does change sometimes, you know.
Well, you think they could have figured that out after being at Caer Paravel. I mean, the whole landscape changes almost. I mean, I can't find, you know, hardly anything that's that similar. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was looking for parts that maybe looked slightly similar. Like, when I was watching it, you know, a couple days ago, that part where Lucy is folding her apple and she's looking out over the ocean, I thought, is that mirroring the shot when she was watching Aslan walk away? But then I looked and I don't think it was.
No.
You know, it would have been neat, but I guess, you know, if the land changes that much, like, hello, get a clue, Peter.
Well, I think, you know, one thing that I suppose I didn't really expect, because when you're reading the book, I suppose you just imagine things differently. And, of course, I was, not to be too nasty, but I was somewhat corrupted by the BBC version. And, of course, in that one, when Lucy sees Aslan at the gorge, then the audience sees him, too, briefly, and then he just disappears magically.
Yeah.
But here, no one sees him. And I suppose it's even somewhat up in the air if Lucy really did see him.
I think that's what they were going for. I think they wanted the audience to doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that's one thing I had a problem with. I really wish we could have seen him because, suddenly they're walking away and she's yelling. She's like, Aslan, Aslan, it's Aslan. And for people who did not know the story, I think they have no idea what she's going on about almost. I just wish we could have just seen just a little.
Yes, but I went back and reread that part in the book. And in the book, the reader is not told that Aslan was ever there. Except later, of course, you find out that she was right. But all you have is her dialogue. It just says
change from book to movie. You have to portray things a little bit differently.
I know, but in the book, I'm just saying, it's not like, it doesn't say, and then Lucy saw Aslan. It just has the dialogue. That's all you have. And so with Lucy's dialogue, if that's all you have there in the book, then, you know, for me, it was just that, well, I trusted Lucy. That was the reason why in the book, I suppose, you're supposed to say, okay, I guess, yeah, Aslan really was there. But it's not like it ever says, and then she saw Aslan again, which it usually does. Aslan's such a visual character in the stories, and there's so many descriptions about him visually, that C.S. Lewis does a pretty good job whenever a character sees him, you know, and then they saw him, or something like that. And then, oh, joy, it was he, things like that. You never get that here, which is why I think that this is perhaps, although it kind of threw me for a loop the first time I saw it, now that I think of it, is probably a truer interpretation than, say, the BBC version where the audience sees Aslan as well.
Right. But it just, it was really startling, the first time. I didn't get it, and on subsequent viewings it gets a bit better, but I personally would have done it differently, but I understand there's reasons,
You can
so
disagree with me. That's
I'm
okay.
not boycotting. No, and I get what you're saying, and I agree, but that's not how I would have
Agree,
done
but I
it.
disagree.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's just what I heard. So,
Yes, I agree, but I don't agree.
this gets into, and also we have a line that Glumpuddle pointed out in the last episode, where it's a little ambiguous what Trumpkin believes, and as far as whether he's, believes that Aslan's there or not. And I think that here. It's true that Trumpkin says, "Well, I'm not. Let's see. Look, I'm not about to jump off a cliff after someone who doesn't exist." And where earlier
Right.
he said, "Well, Aslan deserted us about the same time as you did."
Yeah, I noticed that.
I
It
was
didn't
thinking
make
about that.
sense.
However, and while I do agree it's a bit ambiguous here, in the book, okay, in the book.
In the book, he didn't believe in Aslan.
But remember, his dialogue here from the book is where he says, "Well, he'd be a pretty elderly lion by now if he was the same Aslan you knew when you were there." So, on one hand, you could probably
It
say
fits.
he doesn't believe in Aslan as they know him. Maybe, so for instance, in the book, he might have believed in a really powerful lion, but not really Aslan, okay? And you could make the argument, and I think that it's not too far from the book, because in the book, at one point he didn't really believe that in the old fables, he says, "I think that Aslan and your kings is all eggs and moonshine." But then later he does say, "Well, I think that maybe he'd be an old lion by now, or and maybe he's gone wild." So even there, he's not completely saying, "No, Aslan doesn't exist, he never did exist," and he's not saying, "Yeah, sure,
Well, he
that
doesn't
is something
really
to figure."
change his mind until he meets the Pevensies, right? He doesn't start saying, "Well, maybe, maybe," because maybe he, okay, well, you're not gonna lie to my face, so I'll take your word for it. You would know. But before, maybe he didn't.
Yeah, well, I guess that's, the fact that he meets them would give Aslan more credence.
Right. Because if they exist, then why wouldn't Aslan?
Okay,
It's the first.
fine. Throw my little theory in the dumpster, why don't you? But no, still, I think it's okay. Oh, yeah,
We can
right.
live with it. Whatever. We just overanalyze.
Yeah, I know Gunpowder, he's just gonna he's thinking, "Why didn't they just send the script to us?" It's because we would have never, this fans would have never agreed on
We would
anything.
have never agreed. We would have never done anything.
And some fans would say, this and that,
Oh, that was horrible.
and there's some, there's some things that I don't really. Well, I'll talk about the Night Raid later and how I actually did like it, but okay, are we ready to move on? Next scene.
I think so. Except
Okay.
for you did mention one of my favorite
Oh,
lines.
go ahead.
The one where Peter asks Lucy, he says, "Why wouldn't I have seen him?" And Lucy says, "Maybe you weren't looking." I really like that. I think that kind of, I don't know, maybe I was reading too much into it, but it kind of brings a lot of the, you kind of get that feeling from the book, she's the one who believes, the others, didn't believe, kind of like the whole thing where they're all following her because she's the only one who sees Aslan, no one else does. They didn't do that in the movie, which I wish they had. I wish they had so much, but I
Yeah,
like
it's,
that.
I mean, yeah, they do take the same idea and then put it
Right.
at the end of the story, but the way they work it in at the end just doesn't work as well. But that's another, again, another discussion. We keep jumping ahead of ourselves. You ever wonder where
Poor
that idiom,
viewer
you ever wonder where
or
that idiom
listener.
came from? Jumping ahead of yourself? How can you jump ahead of yourself?
I have
You jump
no
ahead,
clue.
you're there.
Right.
Like one guy, I remember this guy was speaking, he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I just jumped ahead of myself, but now I'm caught back up immediately. So, okay, the dancing lawn.
I thought some of the dialogue was kind of cheesy.
Yeah, I'm reading through it right now. I think for the
kind of
movie,
like where the Narnians had their own little set speech, you know, this and this and this.
Yeah.
Like they rehearsed it or something. It didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I can live with it.
Yeah, I did think. I will say that I thought it was good. I thought from the point where, you know, Reapy Chief says, "That's words from you, dwarf. Or have you forgotten that your people fought with the witch?" That point, and of course Nicobrick's retort to that, and then the whole bit with Truffle Hunter and Glenstorm.
That was a good setup.
That wasn't, of course, straight from the book at all, but it was pretty close, especially Truffle Hunter's
line.
I thought that worked well, although Caspian's dialogue I just did not think was strong at all. And can I say, okay, I'm going to watch the movie again, and I'm going to look for this. I don't think Patrick Twigg's lips are even moving. I really don't. The animation is that bad. I don't think that. I mean, this is the only point in the movie where I'm thinking, "Huh, it's like it's not even finished." I never even noticed. I did. I was watching intently. I thought, "Oh, Patrick Twigg, a little squirrel. Who's talking?" just the point where Casimir says, "You know, beyond these woods, I am a prince, and you know, I can bring peace between us." I thought, you know, I think the fact that we have the contrast between the new dialogue and the more of the classic dialogue is really, I think that's what kind of throws this a curveball, you might say.
Right. Because I guess you could say the dialogue in this scene is more stylistic. It's more,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
For her, you know, it's fancier, you could almost say, than a lot of the casual dialogue. So, I guess maybe it's just a change in styles, but it kind of threw me for a loop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not
mm-hmm.
a huge fan, but I like the whole scene, just not the dialogue, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have headphones on?
Yes, I do.
Okay, because I'm hearing my own echo, oddly enough. But, Warrior just jumped on to Skype. I just sent him a text message saying if he wants to join us. But,
bring him or?
Yeah, he's welcome to jump in here, but I'm not getting a response. Oh, well. Anyway, continuing on, I did think, also, for those of you who are wondering what the Prince Caspian theme is, this is the one part of the movie where you can hear it the clearest. And it's just the part where he says, whether this one is real or not, it brought us together. That's my Bin Ban's impression. That's the one part where you can hear it the most clearly, is this scene right here. And I'm really hoping that they put Reepy Cheep's line, he says, "My life is yours, but my honor is my own." What does he say? Is that it exactly?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, no, he says, "My life is ever at your disposal, but my honor is my own." And, here they had, you know, "We offer you our lives unreservedly," which was a good line, but I'm still hoping that maybe the next line, that old line, gets put in Voids of the Dawn Treader.
Yeah.
Okay. Warrior is
make
busy
as much of a
with
deal.
Warrior's busy with homework.
Oh,
bummer. Well, we'll miss you, Warrior. Anyway, I do think that for the film, it was a good idea to have the Narnians more antagonistic. Because I think
they're not instantly jumping all over him like, "Oh, come, you must be our leader."
Yeah, and I think part of the thing is, with the book, you know, people just understood, and of course Truffle Hunter had to remind them, And he has that line in the movie where he says, Arnie was never right except when the son of Adam was king. And I think some people, I actually read some reviews where some people really didn't get that at all. They just didn't like it. They thought it was a very imperialist view on Lewis's part. But I think that's one reason why they kind of had to have Caspian winning them over, because I think it'd be more difficult for a film audience to grasp the idea that these creatures would be really eager for a son of Adam. So.
Right. Because, I mean, people would think, well, couldn't a centaur do as good of a job?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're obviously a lot wiser, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, yeah. So, ready to move on?
Yep.
Okay. This scene, crossing the gorge, this is... Let's see. I mean, this, the part where they see the Telmarines building the bridge, that's just... I don't know. There's something about it. It just seems so odd to me. I think it's because they were so close. And I'm wondering, how did no one see them? But
exactly. That's what I think. Every time I see that, I mean, Susan and her arrows are sticking up into the air. Yeah. And there's people right by.
I think if they were just on a ridge looking down and they saw it, I thought, oh, that would have worked. But here it just seemed...
How would they ever get that close and not see it? You know what I mean? Or maybe they went in closer on purpose so they could see who it was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But still, that, you know, could you guys be a little bit more careful, please?
Yeah, yeah. It's just...
You know, all these scary-looking guys, you know, they could beat you to a pulp if they wanted to.
Well, apparently not, because they're not the kings and queens.
Yeah, true. But they appear as if they could
they
be
appear,
awful.
Yes. Well, maybe Lucy, they just do an arm twist and she screams. But... You know, how do you think they handled the bit where they return? Because it just seemed to me, it's sort of like they kind of, I mean, it's like they have the same scene from the book where they decide, okay, we're going to do what Lucy says, but they just don't. But it doesn't have any power. It's like they take it and say, okay, well, we'll take the power and real deep meaning behind the scene and we'll move it to the end and execute it there.
Right.
But here, it just, I suppose, just seems sort of odd because it's like, oh, this is the place to do it, but they're not doing it.
Right. Because I know they wanted to get Aslan in, because if you only put him at the end, that's kind of boring. But, you know, as I was watching this for the first time, I didn't know it was a dream. So I'm watching it and I'm like, ooh, you know, maybe they're going to do the whole part, but then they can't really because they already did the part where Lucy finds the path.
Yeah.
But, you know, but they have the concept. And then I'm watching it and then it kind of felt a little flat and I'm wondering why, and then it's a dream. But still,
mm-hmm.
It was slightly odd, but I guess that was really the best way to do it under the circumstances. I mean, we all say, oh, I would have done this differently. I would have done this differently. But then if you look how these people have had to put this movie together from the book and try and make it into something stronger and more cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether they did that is up for question, but that's not what we're talking about. And then you can't be as critical because odds are if you had done it, you would have run into the same problems they did, but you would not have come up with such a good solution,
but
if
we
you
can
say
be
that.
Critical. It's just not very nice.
Right. But, I mean, people are always, you know, saying,
mm-hmm.
oh, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. Well, then I think, well, what would you have done?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would have done this, but then it would have messed up this part. Well, then I would have done this, but then it kind of messes up the whole chain of events. And...
Overall, I think they retold it about as well. I think
right.
just with a few, if they just changed a few lines of dialogue, it just would have cleared quite a few things up. But overall,
right.
as far as scene placement, and I thought it worked pretty well. What did you think of the dialogue with Susan and Lucy around the campfire? I mean, before the dream, because we were talking about the dream here, but...
I thought... You know, considering it was kind of like a substitute for the whole thing, you know, where in the book Lucy's trying to wake them up and trying to get them to come with her, and Susan throws a fit, you know, she doesn't believe, et cetera, et cetera. I took this as sort of a kind of substitute for that, you know, their way to get that in, you know, to... But, you see, in here, Susan isn't as... So we, what do you call it? As disbelieving, I guess you could say, as others, well, as she was in the book.
Yeah, it does take that scene, but it also kind of combines later where she said, apologizes to Lucy, and she says, I really believe you.
Right, that's what I was talking about as well.
Afraid.
Right.
I think this does a good job. I think it also does, surprisingly, I think they're handling, let's assume right now, let's assume that the last battle is made and that the whole Susan situation with the last battle is as it is in the book. I mean, let's just assume that.
What?
What?
If they did it, Go ahead. That was random.
I'm just saying, if we assume that, I think they're setting it up here with Susan.
That's how I felt in the first movie as well. You know how fussy she is almost, you know.
Like here, she has, she says,
I don't believe that.
Yeah, she says, I just got used to the idea of living in England. And she was the first one of all of them to really adjust back to her world. And even the scene when they're at the train station, she says, I think it's, let me find it.
I think it's time we accept that we live here, something like
okay.
that.
She says, I think it's time to accept the fact that we live here. It's no use pretending any different.
Right.
And of course, the fact that she uses the word pretending says a lot. But
right.
I think in that respect, this scene handles that pretty well.
In that context, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what they do later, and who knows who will be directing The Last Battle. And Gresham
yeah.
may not even be involved at that point, so...
Sad to say. Oh my goodness, I can't even think about future movies. We just gotta get past next one. And, yeah, I can't even think about it, especially due to current events, which are not exactly favorable.
And, of course, with the dream sequence, I will say that, of course, Glenpuddle has his famous thread on the forums called The Same Way Twice, The Same Way Twice.
I mean, why is everyone having such a problem with that?
I didn't have a problem with it. I actually thought it was interesting that...
I liked it.
I thought it kind of confirmed that it wasn't just...
something he said in a dream.
Yeah, it was something. It was like a foreshadowing.
Right. You know, because having him say it in a dream is one thing, but having him say it in real life... cements it and confirms it, and I'm trying to remember. It's a part, you know, of the story, and you know, things don't happen the same twice, and it's an important part.
Yeah.
And you know, people thought, oh, he repeats that particular line twice. Oh, that's funny. That's weird.
Well, Glenfiddle laughed. I didn't laugh, but he actually laughed in the theater.
I didn't think it was odd or weird or anything. Until someone mentioned it. I guess it was him. But
I was reading, there's basically two websites I go to for reviews oriented towards families about, you know, how acceptable is the film. One is Plugged In Online, and one is decentfilms.com.
I've never heard of one.
It's a good one. They do much more in-depth reviews, and I have some...
What's it called again?
Decentfilms.com. It's a good website, and it was funny because, of course, I read the review of Prince Caspian, and they tore this apart, they tore this apart, they tore that apart, and I thought, whoa, they really didn't like this movie. And then they gave it a B+ overall, which is about what I would give it. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. And they do point out something here, and I don't think it's quite as significant a change as they point out, but it is something I missed. They talk about, here in the movie, they have Aslan saying, every year you grow, so shall I. Which is a theme from the book.
Right.
However, they point out that a subtle change in the dialogue that does have, if you really, really want to take the dialogue to heart, does change the meaning. Where in the movie he says, every year you grow, so shall I. they point out that in the book, he says, every year you grow, you will find me bigger. Which is, if you think about it, is a change. Because it's not necessarily that Aslan is changing or growing or, oh, I'm stronger now because you're stronger. It's that she is finding him bigger and learning more of him.
Right.
And they had a cow over there.
You want to pick it apart.
Yeah, but I do wanted to at least give maybe some
because
other...
Because
it
is a valid point, I don't think it's cause for...
Yeah, I'm still glad they had it in there overall, but that was one thing they hated. But this is a point where I say, yes, I see what you're saying, and to an extent I agree, but I don't think it's at that big a deal overall for the whole film. But in case there were some fans out there who caught it and I something like that I missed, then I wanted to point it out. Well, let's see. We're going on around 40 minutes here in the recording right now. Let's do the Finding Caspian scene.
Yay.
And then, because this is a good scene, and then we'll wrap it up here.
It's pretty long, too.
Yeah.
So, just finish that one.
Okay, so what were your thoughts?
Well, like the pre to Finding Caspian or the actual meeting Caspian? Because there's a whole part, you know, where Lucy wakes up and...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Speaking of which, my cousin watched the movie with me and she just screamed in the theater when Peter grabs her. And everyone just kind of looked at her because someone else thought it was scary, but she just... She just screamed. And we all look at her, come on.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that, to be sure. I didn't scream.
Good for you.
Yay.
Brave gym fan. Now you are a lioness. Anyway, yeah, I thought the scene, it was interesting because, sword fight was lousy. I'll just get that out of the way. But Caspian and Peter, I forget who pointed out, might have been Glumpuddle. Peter's never heard of Caspian. And we talked about this earlier. Where does Trumpkin learn about Caspian? You can guess that, you know, Trumpkin would have filled him in. Because he's obviously filling them in on other things. Like, what horn? You know, well, he's got to tell them something. Maybe he knows who Prince Caspian is. Maybe he heard at the castle.
Yeah, I always assumed he heard at the castle.
But, I mean, I guess that's...
I mean, he's not stupid. He would have picked up a good deal, I thought.
Yeah.
You know.
He builds a little extendable ear pipe so he can move into the different corners of the castle and hear the different councils going on.
Well, he was right there in the middle of it.
That's true. That's true. But I have to say, really, the only part of this scene I really liked was Reepy Cheep. Again. But Reepy Cheep, it was just, especially the part where, of course, you know, how he responds to Lucy, I thought was so appropriate. Because, of course, he's going to be very, very respectful and still try to, you know, hold his own. Kind of like how when he's with Peter in the book, and he tells him, and he says, you know, my lord, no one will ever speak of cheese or mousetraps or or this and that.
Yeah. I like it because that and also the scene at the end, it kind of sets up the scene in Voyage on Treader where she hugs him goodbye, which is one of my favorite.
Yeah.
I love that. I don't know why, but I just do.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think
like,
that...
See how they're kind of, you know, quote-unquote, forming a relationship. You know, they're becoming friends.
Well, so,
if you can call Reepy Cheep being friends with anyone.
Oh, I think you can.
Yes, I mean, of course he could.
Okay.
But not like, let's sit down and let's have a nice little chat and talk about your life and talk about how the day's going.
We'll have a nice little sword fight.
Exactly.
Well, I think that, and this does, of course, have the Susan and Caspian glance.
Oh, yes. Full with meaning, I'm sure.
But what is the meaning?
You're not exactly what I expected.
But what is
I wasn't expecting this.
So, Susan, what do you think about global warming? But what is the meaning of meaning? That was the name of one of the lectures one of my professors gave.
Interesting.
It was a very interesting lecture. But anyway, you know, I think that it's interesting because looking at this scene, which of course has the very, you know, it was one of the first things that was really well known and very controversial was Peter and Caspian fighting. And there were all kinds of different theories. One was the mistaken identity theory. One was that they're fighting over Susan. One was that they're fighting over the night raid, which now seeing the movie is also very plausible. Because they do draw swords at that one point.
Well, but that's after. Everyone thought, oh, they're fighting.
Yeah, yeah, everyone thought it was before. But it's interesting because this is one of the smallest issues now. And I remember the three... I'm trying to remember what the big issues were. Caspian fighting Peter and Susan and Caspian...
Flirting.
Flirting,
sorry. We had a kiss then. It was just flirting.
It was just flirting. And there was one other, but those were the big ones that everyone was talking about.
And in the end, it's just, oh, that's just perfectly all right. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of disturbing that Peter almost smashes Caspian's head in with a rock, but besides that, you know.
Yeah, and of course it took the cry of Lucy to save them.
I know.
But...
Should have been Susan.
No, don't kill him! Who are you talking to? I don't know that
don't
good looking
kill him, Peter.
Is that
I
good looking
I
boy? Don't kill that good looking boy. All right.
Spare him. I'd like to get to know him a little better.
Yes, we have all types of global warming discussions.
By the way, I saw the movie on Friday, and during the movie, from this point on, I started making a list of any moment in the movie that could be between Susan and Caspian, or, you know, not even, that could be considered romantic or flirting. And it was quite funny, because you make up your own, you know, what's she thinking when she looks at him this way, or when she says this, and you think, oh, she's saying, you know, be careful, don't die, I'm in love with you.
Yeah, well, still my favorite line in that whole context is Lucy's, you might want to call me again?
Call me again.
Which is what every fan is thinking. Every fan is going, what? You might have to call me again? And then, of course, Lucy says it. But
oh, my goodness.
Well, how far did we get? We're almost halfway through. Well, transcript-wise, Glumpuddle said he did cheat with the night raid and just put in they fight at different moments. So
exactly.
I'm not sure how we're going to discuss that scene. That's a very long, complicated scene.
Well, you just take it kind of piece by piece, or you just take the whole time just to discuss it.
Or I borrow a reel from the theater and I do the podcast.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah, I have so many friends who work there, though. So it's... I went to see The Happening for free with a friend of mine.
Yeah, you told me.
Yeah. Prince Caspian's better. Well, Jim Fan, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun again, as usual.
Yeah, although last time was such a blast.
Oh, so lonely.
I know. Glumpuddle, Warrior, Skillet Dude, Jince, Clipsy, we miss you guys and gals.
We need more people.
We do. Well, we'd like more people. We can do it just fine by ourselves. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I being a jerk like Peter?
In fact, who needs anyone else? I can do it by myself.
We're better off without that than a lot of you.
Exactly.
Jim Fan, thanks again.
Okay. You too.
That pretty much wraps up part 3 to the Prince Caspian analysis. If you want to email us about your thoughts or about our thoughts on the film, then please do so. My email address is rillian@narniweb.com, and Jim Fan's is webmaster@spareoom.net. One brief note before you go. This is just in the transcript. The fan, or fan scripts, as we call them, has just been completed for Prince Caspian. It's pretty accurate. I've looked through it, and I see maybe a couple areas where maybe word is different from what I remember, but other than that, it's pretty good. Glumpuddle and a bunch of other people put it together, and so you can get that from the front page of NarniaWeb.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, I'm your host, Relief.